Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
92.9 FM ESPN presents the area's only national columnist who spends his afternoons bringing unique perspective to Memphis radio. He'll make you think. He'll make you laugh. He'll sometimes make you change the station if children are around. And he apologizes in advance for that. It's 4 o'clock. Let's get into it. This is the Gary Parish Show.
All right, I'm here. My name is Gary Parish. I'm talking to you from 54th and Broadway, Midtown Manhattan, New York City. Brad Carson in studio, back in Memphis, producing the program. Glad he's with me. Glad you're with me. Hope you're getting through the day. No obstacles, no disruptions. And I hope you didn't let the fact that Tulane is god-awful at college basketball keep you away from FedEx Forum last night, if you had tickets to be inside FedEx Forum last night, because if so, you missed history. Jeremiah Martin becomes the first American Athletic Conference player to score at least 43 points in a game. Jeremiah Martin becomes the first University of Memphis player in history to get at least 40 points in a game, twice in a career. Incredible performance from somebody who is genuinely on one of the best scoring streaks in all of college basketball. We're going to talk about that momentarily, but first, very quickly, let me set this afternoon's schedule for you. John Martin is my little buddy, co-host Jason and John show. Used to be with Cookie, upgraded to Sam. He's going to join me in about 20 minutes. We will talk about Jeremiah Martin's incredible string of basketball games. We're going to do that with John Martin right around 4:20. When I finish that segment, I'll do four notable stories, 4:44, at which point we're going to discuss four previously undiscussed stories. Among them, Zion Williamson suffered a knee injury last night. High-profile game with the 44th president of the United States sitting courtside. So now the shut-it-down crowd has advice for the presumed number one pick of the 2019 NBA draft. I'll give you my advice for Zion Williamson around 4:44. Mississippi State won at Georgia last night, thanks at least partly to a weird and controversial ending. I'll talk about that a little later on this hour. Good news for Kentucky on the injury front. Reed Travis will miss games, but he's not seriously injured, so he will be back, and that's better than the alternative for John Calipari's Wildcats. I'll tell you about that just before 5 o'clock. And just a terrible story out of Syracuse. Hall of Fame coach Jim Boeheim hit and killed with his vehicle a man late last night after Syracuse beat Louisville by 20 points inside the Carrier Dome. The man's car was disabled. Reportedly, Jim was trying to not hit the car and hit the man. He released a statement earlier today. We'll get into that during four notable stories at 4:44. 5 o'clock, Jeff Calkins, just like always. Then I will eventually do dinner to go and get out of here. So that's the rundown. We got a lot to get to, but I wanted to start with Jeremiah Martin, because the Memphis native and University of Memphis senior had another historic night last night. He took 24 shots, made 15, and finished with a career-high 43 points, 8 assists, 6 rebounds, and 5 steals in the Tigers' 102-76 victory over Tulane that moved Memphis to 16-11 overall, 8-6 in the conference. He's the only Memphis player to ever score at least 40 twice in a career. He is the only American Athletic Conference player to also do that. And his 43 points last night is a AAC record. Again, first Memphis player to ever score at least 40 twice in a University of Memphis career. It means Penny Hardaway never did it. Keith Lee never did it. CDR never did it. Wani Wags never did it. Jimmy Snap never did it. Larry Finch never did it. Ronnie Robinson never did it. Neither did William Bedford, Lorenzen Wright, Rodney Carney, or Derrick Rose. No player in the American has ever scored 40 twice in the same season. No player in the American has ever scored 43 in a game until Jeremiah Martin did it last night. And it really is a remarkable story. You might remember, I guess it was last weekend, after the loss to UCF, Jeremiah Martin told Drew Hill of the Commercial Appeal he feels like he's the best player in this league, playing for the best coach in this league, playing for the best team in this league. And we discussed it Monday, and we just sort of went through it point by point. And I think where we settled was, if you want to say Penny Hardaway is going to be the best coach in the AAC, or Penny Hardaway is going to have the best career of any coach in the AAC, like, I guess you could say that. You'd be guessing a little bit, but it's not completely unreasonable, given that he's already shown himself to be a capable coach, a high-level recruiter, and Memphis basketball should be back rocking and rolling in the top 25, this time next season. But it'd be hard to argue Penny Hardaway is the best coach in the AAC right now when, you know, Greg Marshall's been to a Final Four, when Kelvin Sampson has been to a Final Four, when Mick Cronin has Cincinnati consistently making the tournament year after year after year after year. And as for the best team in the league, there's just no way to intelligently argue that. There's no data that supports that whatsoever. Houston's a top 10 team. There's at least three teams in every reputable computer ranking, and sometimes four, that are ranked higher than the University of Memphis. That's the least true of the three things that Jeremiah Martin said. And we decided that the most true thing, even if it wasn't technically true, or at least possibly true, the most true thing he said was that he might be the best player in the American Athletic Conference. And on Monday, you could argue it a few different ways. You know, you could make a case for Jaron Cumberland at Cincinnati, maybe Shiz Austin as well. But as we sit here right now, February 21st, I think you can actually make an argument that Jeremiah Martin is the best player in the American Athletic Conference, if only because it's not like he's playing in a league with, you know, Zion Williamson or some of these other monsters in some of the other power conferences. Either way, I think you can reasonably say this. Nobody in the AAC is playing as well as he's playing right now, at least on the offensive end of the court. And when you consider he had five steals last night, perhaps on the defensive end of the court as well. You go back to that South Florida game on February 2nd, and he's gone for 41 points, 26 points, 12 points, 31 points, 25 points, and then 43 points last night. And the other impressive thing is it's not just an inefficient 43. You know, he is largely doing this by shooting very good percentages from the field. In that South Florida game where he got 41, he was 13 of 20 from the field. That's 65%. He was 7 of 9 from three-point range. That's 78%. You know, against Cincinnati, he was 9 of 19 from the field, 47%. That's not terrible. And then he comes back, shoots 50% from the field against UConn, 53% from the field against East Carolina, not quite as efficient against UCF, 42%, but last night, 15 of 24, that's 63% from the field. He was 5 of 9 from three-point range, 56% from beyond the arc. And so he's doing it in a mostly efficient way. He's doing it, at least last night, in a convincing blowout win. And yeah, he's doing it somewhat because of the tempo at which Memphis plays. There are more possessions, there are more shots. But to focus on that, even for 7 seconds, is to nitpick it to death. He is on one of the best runs in college basketball right now, and playing as well as anybody in University of Memphis history has ever played, at least from a strictly scoring perspective. Again, first player Memphis history to ever get at least 40 points twice in a college career. He's done it twice in the month of February. And when you combine it with the fact that he was never supposed to do anything close to this, it really does make it even more remarkable. He was the least heralded player in a 7-player class signed by Josh Pastner. The question about Jeremiah Martin when he entered the University of Memphis, the questions were so vastly different than the questions we often attach to players when they enter the University of Memphis, particularly local players when they enter the University of Memphis. Like when James Wiseman commits to the University of Memphis, the questions about him, is he going to go on to be the number one pick in the NBA draft? Is he going to lead Memphis to a Sweet 16 or an Elite 8 or a Final Four in what is probably going to be just 1 year of college basketball? With Jeremiah Martin, the questions were like, Is he good enough to play at Memphis? Will he ever play at Memphis? He was ranked 397th in the class of 2015. That had him behind Dedrick Lawson, KJ Lawson, Nick Marshall, Craig Randall, and everybody else in that Memphis class. Again, that class, it featured, actually think, eight players. It's an eight-player recruiting class. And he was the least heralded of the eight. Originally committed to Louisiana Tech when Mike White, who's now the head coach at Florida, was the head coach at Louisiana Tech. And I remember talking to Mike after Jeremiah decommitted from Louisiana Tech and committed to Memphis. And even though Mike was obviously disappointed for all the reasons you would be, he didn't trash him at all. He said, oh no, he's good enough to play at Memphis. We were thrilled to have him committed at Louisiana Tech. Mike told me, don't pay attention to the recruiting ranking because whoever put that number next to his name got it a little bit wrong. Nobody was trying to argue that Jeremiah Martin should have been a McDonald's All-American or should have been a consensus top 100 player, but I do remember the coach who evaluated him as much as anybody, Mike White at La Tech, who got a commitment from him, said there's no way there's 300 players in the country in that class better than Jeremiah Martin, and as his college career has unfolded, that seems undeniably true. I don't think he's going to be an All-American. I'm skeptical he's going to be the American Athletic Conference Player of the Year because that typically goes to a great player on a top two or top three team in the league, but he does have a chance because the numbers are starting to just jump completely off the page. And if he continues to operate at this level, certainly he'll be first team all conference and he'll have a chance depending on what else happens around the league. And depending on how Memphis does in these final four regular season games, he'll at least have a chance and a reasonable case can be made for him to be the American Athletic Conference Player of the Year. And that would be a tremendous honor again, given that he was ranked right around 400th in his high school class. And last night, this led to Mark Giannotto at some point, columnist at the Commercial Appeal, asking the following question: is Jeremiah Martin the best prospect, best player, who ever signed with the University of Memphis under Josh Pastner? And that would have seemed like a ridiculous question to ask a couple of years ago. Not so ridiculous to ask, given that he just did something last night that had no other University of Memphis player, no John Calipari player, Larry Finch player, Dana Kirk player, or Josh Pastner player, or anybody else had ever done. And I think the answer to the question is a simple no. He's probably not the best player that Josh Pastner ever signed at the University of Memphis. And by best player, I mean has gone on to do the best things as a college basketball player. He's certainly not the best prospect Josh ever signed, but has he gone on to do the best things as a college player, among the players that Josh Pastner signed and enrolled at the University of Memphis? And it's a tricky question because I know Mark didn't mean it this way, but it sort of invites you to say, yeah, but he's not as good as this guy, this guy, this guy, after he literally just had a night no other player, or he's done things in this month no other player in University of Memphis basketball history had done. But it did spark a conversation among both Memphis media and Memphis basketball fans. And I think the consensus is that the correct answer to gone on to do the best things in college basketball, ranking those players, with the stipulation being they had to be initially a player that Josh Pastner enrolled at the University of Memphis, the consensus is that it's got to be Will Barton or Dedrick Lawson. And I think it's got to be Will Barton or Dedrick Lawson. Will Barton was a not a consensus All-American, but a some people's All-American in his final year at the University of Memphis. And Dedrick Lawson has a chance to be a first-team All-American this season. Jeremiah Martin has a chance to be the AAC Player of the Year, but I still don't think that translates into an All-American. I'd be surprised. Again, got little to do with Jeremiah Martin, a lot to do with the fact that Memphis is likely to miss the NCAA tournament. But that list of best players that Josh Pastner ever enrolled at the University of Memphis, based on what they went on to do while playing college basketball, I'd probably rank it Dedrick Lawson, then Will Barton. But if you wanted to go Will Barton and then Dedrick Lawson, that's fine. And then after that, I think it's probably Joe Jackson, whose career gets twisted in a variety of ways for a variety of reasons all the time. Because Joe entered the University of Memphis with this like crazy hype, he was the king of Memphis, his career for some did feel like a bit of a bit underwhelming. He never led Memphis to a Sweet 16 or further. You know, he didn't go on to be a lottery pick or a pick at all. But he was a Conference USA Player of the Year, two-time CUSA, you know, tournament MVP, somebody who did take Memphis to multiple NCAA tournaments. You know, he was one of the 30 finalists in 2014 for the Naismith College Player of the Year Award. And so I would equate Joe's career at Memphis to, you know, somebody's career when they sign a massive NBA contract and then they're pretty good, like really good, but not quite worthy of the contract. Like it didn't quite meet the hype. That is Joe Jackson's 4-year career at the University of Memphis. But if you'll take the expectations off of it, forget what you thought you knew about Joe Jackson when he enrolled, the day he enrolled at the University of Memphis. If you take the expectations off of it and just focus on what he actually did at the University of Memphis, I think you could make an argument that he belongs on the list, near the top, of guys who went on to do the best things in college basketball after initially signing with Josh Pastner at the University of Memphis. But bottom line, I'll put it this way. Jeremiah Martin's high on that list now, too, and deservedly so. Historic night last night, and given that he's been consistently playing at this level, perhaps he'll soon become the first Memphis player in history and AAC player in history to get at least 40 three different times. I'll talk more about this with John Martin next.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parrish Show. Live from the Bluff Restaurant and Sports Bar Studios on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Everything I love. This ain't a wave or a phase, cause all that fades. This lifestyle's forever when you made. They tweet about the length I made them wait. What the f*** you expect when it got a cake?
Big game last night, Cameron Indoor Stadium, and less than a minute into it, Zion Williamson goes down with a knee injury, and less than a minute after that, basically everybody with a social media account had advice for the presumed number one pick in the 2019 NBA draft, what he should and should not do going forward. We will get into that story in the next segment. Jeff Calkins is going to join me a little after 5 o'clock. But right now, he is my little buddy, co-host, Jason and John. Weekdays from 11 to 2. Used to be with Cookie. Now he's with Sam. He upgraded to Sam. It's John Martin making the big interview.
Award-winning writers, athletes, coaches, the biggest names in sports. It's the Gary Parrish Show Big Interview. Presented by Ruth's Chris Steakhouse in Memphis. Now on 92.9 FM ESPN.
John Martin, it's your big buddy Gary. How you doing?
Hey, man, what's going on?
I don't know what's going on. You tell me what's going on. I don't even live in Memphis anymore.
Well, people are talking about naming streets and stuff.
So that's fun. We did that yesterday.
Yeah.
That was fun.
I'm glad.
That was fun.
I'm glad something, you know, we have something to rally around in this town, you know.
I hope I get back. I hope I get back to Memphis someday to see the corner of Main and Drip.
Oh, you're going to be the one cutting the ribbon on it, Gary.
Yeah.
I don't know when I'm ever coming home again.
Yeah, so let's just focus on the positives.
Yeah, go positive, please.
Let's focus on the positives, Gary.
All right, I'll focus on the positives. How about Jeremiah Martin last
night? There we go. Look at that.
Points inside FedEx Forum. Just a tremendous game and a tremendous string of games that he's been putting together. He, last weekend, publicly said to the Commercial Pill, I think he was talking to Drew Hill, that he feels like he's the best player in the American Athletic Conference, that he is playing for the best coach in the American Athletic Conference, playing for the best team in the American Athletic Conference. And I think you could take issue with parts of that. We discussed it earlier this week. But maybe he really is the best player in the American Athletic Conference, because last night, by scoring 43 points, he did something no AAC player had ever done. Nobody had ever scored 43 in a game before. And he did something else that no other AAC player has done, which is score at least 40 twice in the same season. So if Jeremiah Martin wants to think he's the best player in the American Athletic Conference, I don't know that I'm here to argue with him anymore.
Now, I don't really think you can, honestly. And if Memphis was a little bit better as a team, he'd be an absolute lock for player of the year. As such, and you know the way these things work, it'll probably go to the best player on, you know, one of the two best teams, and probably going to go to Jarrett Cumberland of Cincinnati. But hey, maybe Memphis, you know, finishes strong to end the year, and they finish with top four seed, and Jeremiah's numbers are just too good to overlook. It is amazing when you consider, Gary, just as many great players have come through the University of Memphis basketball program, that nobody has ever scored 40 or more twice in their career. That means anybody. Larry Finch didn't do it. Keith Lee never scored 40. Larry Keenan didn't do it. Penny never did it. The names of guys who have come through this program and have not done what Jeremiah Martin did last night is striking. And, you know, I do think that has really helped make this season memorable. And otherwise, it probably would not be, right? It's Penny's first season, but, you know, it's kind of humdrum, ho-hum. They win games, they lose games. But Jeremiah has, and his efforts have helped make this one, I think, Tiger fans will remember for a long time, which is good.
You know, I was in studio last night for CBS Sports Network, and we do a 30-minute Inside College Basketball show at the end of the night. Last night it started about 1:15 Eastern after Nevada had lost at San Diego State. And there's a portion of the show every night that's called Inside the Stats, and it's just big bullet point number things that happen that might be otherwise off of people's radar, like a player having a big game for an unranked team. And so when I started seeing all of you guys back in Memphis tweeting about Jeremiah Martin becoming the first Memphis player in history to score at least 40 points in multiple games, I passed that along to our producer. I said, hey, this might be good for Inside the Stats. And immediately he said, Derrick Rose never did that, or yeah, Penny Hardaway never did that, or Chris Douglas Roberts never did that, or Dwan Wagner never did that. I guess, if nothing else, surprising. Yeah. If you would have asked me yesterday, has a Memphis player ever scored 40 multiple times in a college career, I would have said, damn, it sounds something like something maybe Larry Finch would have done.
Yeah.
And yet it had never happened. Jeremiah Martin is not the best player in the history of the school, but he has, from a scoring perspective, done things that nobody else in the history of the school had ever done.
Yeah, and it's amazing when you consider, if he would have just been average his freshman year, he was not good, he didn't play that much as a freshman. If he'd have just been average as a freshman, the guy probably would have a chance to go down in the top five of scoring. I mean, he averaged 2.5 points a game, basically, as a freshman. And wasn't all that great as a sophomore. I mean, I think he averaged like 10 points a game. But the fact that he is doing all of this, like, he's probably going to finish number 11. I don't think he will catch CDR for the top 10. But the fact that he is going to get to number 11 basically in two seasons of work, like, that is crazy. Crazy to think about, the guy who's going to get to the top 11 in scoring at Memphis in two full seasons of work, basically.
And the idea that he's doing it after starting his college career as the least heralded recruit,
yep,
in a 7-prospect recruiting class is another interesting part of the story. This isn't, you know, Joe Jackson, you can say what you want about him in his career. He was super productive, even if he didn't meet the hype that he arrived on campus with. But Joe Jackson was always supposed to be super productive. You know, if you have an opinion about Joe Jackson, it's that even though he was super productive, he wasn't quite as much of everything as you thought he might be when, as a high school senior, he was the quote-unquote king of Memphis. You know, Dwan Wagner had some big games at Memphis. He was always supposed to. Derrick Rose was unstoppable in the NCAA tournament. That's what he was supposed to be. Jeremiah Martin was just supposed to be a dude. The questions about Jeremiah, will he ever play at Memphis? And now not only is he playing at Memphis, he's doing things that no other Memphis player has ever done. That being part of the story makes it an even more compelling story, I think.
Yeah, and listen, I mean, it sets the tone for what could be, maybe you can talk yourself into a magical little run here in the conference tournament, you know, because UCF, if you look, I mean, the goal at this point is to finish in the top four so you can get that bye. We've known that for months. And UCF, even though you just lost to them on their home floor, I mean, they get into the gauntlet of their schedule now. They're playing Cincinnati. They're playing Houston again. They're playing Temple. They're playing the best teams in the conference. Whereas Memphis, you know, they got to win Saturday at Wichita State. That's not going to be easy, but it can happen. Like, you could see a scenario where Memphis can beat a Wichita State on the road, maybe. You got Temple at home. You'll probably be favored in that game. And so, you know, you've got some games coming up here that are a little bit more manageable for you. I'm not saying they're going to go 4-1 because they do play Cincinnati on the road. But if you could do that, you'll be a top four seed, I bet. And if you're a top four seed, then I think you have a chance in the conference. If you're not a top four seed, it'll be tough. But I guess crazier things have happened. They are at home and they're a good team when they're at home.
So it's four remaining games at Wichita State, home against Temple, at Cincinnati, home against Tulsa. KenPom projects them to win two and lose two.
Exactly.
But the Wichita State game is basically a coin flip situation.
The
projected score is 77-76 Wichita State. So obviously, I think 2-2 is respectable.
Yep.
3-1 is tremendous. 4-0 is improbable. But you'd kill for that. I think your larger point about trying to finish in the top four of the AAC is very possible. And then if you look at the other three schools that would be there, presumably,
yep,
it would be Houston, Cincinnati, and UCF. And we keep talking about the American Athletic Conference tournament like, you know, Memphis isn't going to be a significant underdog against anybody, and that's true. And, like, you know, Memphis isn't as good as Houston, but maybe in that building they could beat Houston, and that's true. But I think what sometimes gets left out of the conversation is that you might not have to play Houston to win the American Athletic Conference tournament.
Like, no doubt.
If Houston were to get bounced in the semifinals or even the quarterfinals of the AAC tournament by somebody other than Memphis, it wouldn't be the first time in history a one seed has lost early in its conference tournament. It happens in North Carolina all the time. And so you've already smashed UCF at home. You were up double digits in the second half against Cincinnati at home, and you might not have to play Houston at all. And even if you do have to play Houston, when I texted Kim Pomeroy last week and said, give me a projected score for a Memphis-Houston game inside FedEx Forum, he said Houston 78, Memphis 72. That's what his computer spit out, which again means, yeah, Memphis would be an underdog against Kelvin Sampson's team, but not a significant underdog. And when you've got Jeremiah Martin playing the way he's playing right now, and you've got that event scheduled for your building, it really, and this is, again, total coincidence, but a great thing for Penny Hardaway's first season. Not only Jeremiah's individual play keep it interesting, but that carrot at the end, the idea that it's not crazy unrealistic to think that this could end up with Memphis cutting nets in Memphis, which would just be an awesome story. The idea that that's not that unrealistic is I think it just helps keep everybody interested going forward.
Yeah, it does. I mean, if you look back on their loss against Houston, that's the one where afterwards Penny came out and said, we can't win big games. Like, they look downright kind of competitive because Houston's just been killing everybody. Like, they're a top 10 team. They're a legitimate team. I don't think we knew that about them when that game was happening. Now that we know that, it's kind of like, huh, that loss probably wasn't as bad as we thought it was. I mean, they made a run in the second half. It was competitive. They're on the road.
Well, and last night I thought, what if one of their players got injured after watching that Duke game? Not to be dismal, but like,
right,
things,
oh, yeah,
weird,
I mean,
weird crap
happen,
happens,
yeah,
at the end of the year for these big teams.
Yeah,
you know?
Anything can happen for sure. So Houston, you know, you feel like you could be competitive against them at home. I mean, you had a chance. I mean, a real chance to beat Cincinnati. You were up for the majority of the game, basically up double digits at half against Cincinnati at home. All you got to do, really, most likely, is beat one of them. Maybe you have to go through both, but more realistically, you probably just have to beat one of them. And anybody else in the conference, they've beaten UConn. They've beaten UCF. I think they're going to beat Temple here in Memphis. That's what it boils down to, is can you beat a Cincinnati or a Houston? And we've already seen they were up for 35 minutes against Cincinnati. So, yeah, I mean, this is a team that I think in those kinds of moments, they were up for 35 minutes against Texas Tech before they unraveled a little bit late. You know, they've shown an ability to play with good teams and to be in big games. And so I think that's something, especially with the way that they've really found who they are identity-wise, which is, let's just give the ball to Jeremiah.
Right.
I think that will help them now that they've figured that out a little bit. And, you know, I really do think they're a team that competes. So, yeah, I think that's all on the table.
Talking to John Martin. He's on Twitter at JohnMartin929. And a point I'd made last week additionally is, how many coaches can honestly look their players in the eyes and say, we don't have to win a road game or a neutral court game to go to the NCAA tournament? Like, it's unfortunate that we lose at UCF and at South Florida and at Tulsa and at Temple, at Houston. Those are things we're not going to have be asked to do to go to the NCAA tournament. I don't want to say it doesn't matter, but if the goal is to try to get the auto bid, we're not going to be required to win on the road. We're not going to be required to win on a neutral court. Mm-hmm. All we are required to do is win, presumably, hopefully, mm-hmm. three games inside FedEx Forum against teams we know we can beat inside FedEx Forum. Like, that's not, you know, coaches all the time will spin it forward for a basketball team and say, hey, I know we've been disappointing. Hey, I know that this hasn't unfolded the way we thought it would or wanted it to. But remember, we've got the Big Ten tournament coming up, so yep. We've got a chance. But you really don't have a chance. You're going to run into Michigan. You're going to run into Michigan State. You're going to run into Purdue. If you've been bad in the Big Ten, you really don't have a chance. Same thing, a bad ACC school. Josh Pastner can't look his players in the eyes and say, well, we got the ACC tournament, so you never know. No, we know.
Right.
You're either going to lose to a bad team or get smashed by a good team.
Hey, that's the 2016-17 coach of the year you're talking about, brother.
Yeah, but it's 2018-19, and things are slightly different right now. My point being, Penny Hardaway might be the only coach in America, like really, only coach in America, who can honestly look his players in the eyes and say, to go to the NCAA tournament, we do not have to win a road game. We do not have to win a neutral court game. All we have to do is win games in our building against teams that we know we can beat in our building. He might really be the only coach who can say that.
Yeah, and you know, this is the last time that the AAC tournament is going to be in Memphis for at least 3 years because, as you know, Gary, they're moving to that Dickies Arena in Fort Worth for the next 3 years. So this could be the last time we see the tournament in Memphis for a long time, you know, 3, 4, 5 years maybe. So make the most of it. Cut the nets down. It'd be a hell of a story. And I know you'd be here on the sideline back home where you belong to chronicle it all.
There's no question. I'm talking to John Martin here on 92.9 FM ESPN. I should clarify, there are some low major coaches who could probably say that because
right.
some
UNLV.
Of these low major tournaments are played on
we don't care
college
about
campuses. But in terms of like top seven league in America, Penny might be the only coach in one of those leagues who can say the things I said he could honestly say. Before I let you go, I believe it was Mark Giannotto last night, columnist, Commercial Appeal, tweeted a question. Is Jeremiah Martin the best Josh Pastner recruit ever? Where did you come down on that?
No, I mean, as much as I love him, like, and this is gonna, I'm not even trying to diminish him. I kind of hate that question because it's just not Jeremiah. The answer is not Jeremiah. The answer is Will Barton. And I guess you can your criteria could be whatever you want it to be. Like best college player. I mean, you know, I guess in terms of production, when Jeremiah was here longer, you might have to go with Jeremiah. But just sheer best player. Now you look at what he's doing in the NBA, and maybe your judgment's kind of shrouded by that, but. I mean, I don't know how the answer is not Will Barton. I mean, you could even say Dedrick Lawson, too, for that matter. So,
well, if the answer is not Will Barton, then it is Dedrick Lawson.
Right, right.
It's one of those two. And I'm with you. The question is set up on a day, and I know Mark didn't do this intentionally, but the question's set up in a way that if you are to discuss it, you are the day after Jeremiah Martin just had one of the greatest performances in University of Memphis basketball history, you're reminding the world that he's not really as good as some of these other people.
Right.
But the truth is, if you were ranking players who signed with the University of Memphis under Josh Pastner, it's Dedrick Lawson, Will Barton in some order. And then if you want to debate Joe Jackson, Jeremiah Martin, that's fine. But I will say Joe Jackson is a two-time CUSA tournament MVP. He is a Conference USA player of the year.
Yep.
You know, I don't think Jeremiah is going to get those types of accolades. Now, that might
He had two tournament wins. I mean, his teams were better, but, like, I mean, he did win.
Single-handedly brought his team to the tournament that one year down in UTEP. El Paso.
Yeah, yeah, man. I mean, at UTEP. So, I mean, I even would have to probably give the nod to Joe over Jeremiah. Yeah. But, like, I don't want to do that on a day like today. I think Jeremiah is clear. If you want to, like, if you want to give Jeremiah some love, he's having the best season of anybody under Josh Pastner, like any singular campaign. He is having the best singular campaign, I think, of any Tiger basketball. Certainly this conference run he is on, where he's scoring 25 automatic. I mean, that is, we have not seen something like that ever.
I would say you might be right, but I would place Deidre Lawson.
Oh my God!
This guy,
he ain't coming your way. He's at Kansas now, Gary.
Oh geez.
But he qualifies for what we're discussing. Yeah.
So you're saying his Kansas campaign.
Oh, he
counts?
Brought in a Kansas season on you.
He's averaging 19 points and 10 rebounds for a
no,
top 15 team.
No, he doesn't play here anymore.
We're talking about Memphis.
He doesn't.
I thought
play
we were talking
anymore.
About Josh Pastner recruit.
I thought we were talking
about Josh Pastner recruit
at this school
at a different place. He's a Bill Self recruit now.
You said Jeremiah Martin is having the best season of any Josh Pastner recruit ever, and I submit that maybe he's certainly on the best run.
You see what he does to me, John.
But Deidre Lawson is probably having
but
a better season.
Deidre
Lawson might be a first team All American. Jeremiah Martin's not going to be that.
Okay, but Deidre Lawson's a Bill Self recruit now.
He's
left
forever a Josh Pastner recruit.
Oh.
He's a Keelan Lawson recruit.
He's a Keelan Lawson recruit. Let's rank seasons by Keelan
he's a
Lawson
defector.
So. It's all 1 through 5 is Deidre.
either way, incredible performance from Jeremiah Martin last night inside a FedEx Forum. We look forward to the next one. Thank you, little buddy. I'll see you later.
All right, man. Get home soon, okay?
I'm going to do my best. All I'd right. like to do that sometime soon. That's John Martin here on 92.9 FM ESPN. When we come back, Zion Williamson suffered a knee injury last night, opening minute of Duke's eventual loss to North Carolina inside Cameron Indoor Stadium. About a minute after that, seemingly everybody with a social media account had advice for Zion Williamson, what he should and should not do. I also have advice for Zion Williamson. I'll tell you what it is next.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parrish Show, live from the Bluff Restaurant and Sports Bar Studios on 92.9 FM ESPN.
It feels so good, it should cost. Brought an alligator, I ain't talking Lacoste. Made me say, like a mix of Master P and Rick Ross.
Jeff Calkins is your award-winning columnist, Daily Memphian, host of the Jeff Calkins Show. He's going to join me a little after 5 o'clock. We'll get back into the Jeremiah Martin story then. But right now, if you don't mind, I got 4 stories I'd like to discuss.
4 stories presented by the Bluff Restaurant and Bar. 4 notable stories at 4:44. Gary tends to lose focus, start telling stories, and forget what he wanted to talk about at certain points every afternoon. So we've developed a device that ensures he'll touch on important things you need to know each day at this time. This is GP's 4 Notable Stories at 4:44. Story number 1.
Big game last night inside Cameron Indoor Stadium is Duke, North Carolina. That's number 1 Duke against number 8 North Carolina. And it was especially big because it was Zion Williamson's next game. Tickets were going for, in some cases, $10,000 per seat. Barack Obama, the 44th president of the United States of America, was sitting courtside, and less than a minute into the game, scary moment. Zion Williamson goes down, busts through his shoe, like the shoe exploded. And it was funny last night, people trying to figure out, how did his shoe explode? Because he's 290 pounds, and he's moving in a way 290-pound people don't do. So, like, it wasn't that shocking to me that the shoe exploded. Like, the guy is built like the Incredible Hulk. How many times have you seen the Incredible Hulk's shoes and clothes and everything bust off? That's all that happened to Zion last night. He just shed his clothing like the Incredible Hulk. So the shoe explodes, and then he goes down in an awkward way, and it becomes clear that he has possibly suffered some sort of knee injury, which is just terrifying, because it's awful anytime you see an athlete get hurt, you know, regardless of circumstances, in a very public way. It's especially scary when the athlete in question is possibly, if not probably, worth literally hundreds of millions of dollars. And so this becomes a big story, the biggest story in sports, trending regardless of sports on Twitter and everywhere else. And I will say, for most of the game, people were speculating how serious it would be. And I said this last night on television. I'm not a doctor. I'm not evaluating or diagnosing Zion Williamson. But there was a report shortly after Zion got hurt from Maria Taylor, who was the sideline reporter inside Cameron Indoor. And she said this on TV. She said Zion is in a hallway testing his knee to see if he can return. And if you know anything about serious knee injuries, what you know is that that's not something you test to see if you return. You know, these trainers are so sophisticated that they can quickly tell if your knee is stable or not. They might know the severity of a knee injury if it is a severe knee injury without an MRI, but you're not going to tear your ACL in a basketball game and a trainer be completely oblivious to that and send you out in a hallway to test your knee. Like, I tore my ACL more than 20 years ago playing baseball. And we were in a tournament at the University of Memphis, and the trainer who actually worked on me, at the time, he and I didn't know each other because I was just a high school baseball player from Horn Lake, but ultimately we had a we got to know each other because we worked hand in hand. It was Eddie Cantler, the University of Memphis, the late University of Memphis athletic trainer. But he's the one that pulled me into the facility or went with me into the facility, and within seconds he was like, this is serious. And that was 20 years ago. So just think about how advanced we are now. My point being, once Maria Taylor said Zion Williamson's in a hallway testing his knee, it seemed pretty clear to me this was not going to be a devastating ACL tear or something like that. It was going to be a minor sprained knee from which he will return. And yet you still don't know for certain. So there's all sorts of speculation. Up until the moment, Mike Krzyzewski, post-game, said it's a minor knee sprain and the knee is stable. And then everybody can sort of breathe a sigh of relief because now you know that Zion Williamson will play basketball again without having to have surgery so that he can play basketball again. But in the meantime, from the moment he went down till that moment, and really even deeper into the night and into today, basically, everybody with a social media account's got advice for Zion Williamson. And I don't know if it's the majority opinion, but there certainly is a significant portion of people who comment on such things who believe that what we saw last night is exactly why Zion Williamson should not be playing college basketball. That he should have shut it down a long time ago and should shut it down now and not return to play college basketball. And to that, I guess I would just say this. I understand the sentiment because in a vacuum, it seems crazy that somebody who is, you can reasonably say, is maybe worth hundreds of millions of dollars. Like, that's not crazy. He's going to sign a $100 million shoe deal right off the bat. So you can have opinions about what you think Zion Williamson is going to be or not be as a basketball player. But before we figure that out for sure, he going to have $100 million in the bank. And if he goes on to become anything close to what people think, yeah, he's going to earn hundreds of millions of dollars before he's done playing this sport. And the idea that he's out there playing two times a week for no paycheck in a vacuum is insane, especially when you consider everybody around him is making money. On the secondary market last night, tickets were going, in some cases, for $10,000 a seat. Because people wanted to see Zion Williamson play basketball. And so, I agree with you. If you think amateurism rules are awful, and that Zion Williamson should be able to profit and accept fair market value for his likeness or anything else, I'm with you. I'm also with you if you think high school players should be able to enter the NBA draft straight out of high school. I've been saying it and writing it forever, as often as anybody else in my profession does. I hate amateurism. I hate the system. I think Zion Williamson and anybody else who wants to out of high school should be able to enter the NBA draft. I'm with you. But what I wish the sit it out crowd would understand is that to make all those points while refusing to acknowledge that there isn't real value in different ways, but real value to Zion Williamson playing college basketball is wrong. Because there is real value to Zion Williamson playing college basketball. First and foremost, it's what he wants to do. Go talk to NBA players who had great college careers or great college experiences. They will often tell you it's the most fun they ever had playing basketball. You do not get this time, these years back. Zion Williamson was always going to have 1 year of college basketball to play. He's playing it with his best friends on a massive stage for the biggest brand in the sport. He's got a chance to be the National Player of the Year and a national champion. That's not worth nothing. And I'm not even talking about what it's worth to him from a marketing perspective, because this gets lost a little bit as well. Everybody acts like Zion Williamson has always been this thing that was going to be the National Player of the Year and the number one pick in the draft and somebody who was going to sign a $100 million shoe contract before his rookie season. That's just not true. It's revisionist history. Nobody had Zion Williamson as a projected National Player of the Year in the preseason. Literally nobody. Guess what else? Nobody had him projected as the number one pick in the draft on November 1st. Nobody. That has all happened since he started playing basketball at Duke. So he's made, even if he ain't got the direct deposit yet, this time he's spent playing basketball at Duke has greatly enhanced how much money he's going to earn later this calendar year and going forward. So, I don't think he should be playing and not getting a paycheck right now or not being compensated in some real way outside of tuition, scholarship, cost of attendance stipend. But it's intellectually dishonest to act like his time at Duke hasn't made him real money. And yet, that's not even really the point I'm making. The point I'm making is he wants to play college basketball. He's playing with his best friends on a massive stage and has got an opportunity to create incredible memories and leave a legacy. That's worth something to some people. So when you say, if I were Zion Williamson, I'd shut it down, what you're doing is assigning what you think matters to you or would matter to you if you were in his shoes. When what you should be doing is allowing him to assign value to what matters to him. As long as he knows the pros and cons of everything, he should be able to do whatever it is he wants. Like I saw a quote, a tweet from Trae Young early today, late last night, and he said Zion Williamson should shut it down. Again, when people say that, what they mean is that he's already secured his draft spot. Why would he risk anything and risk that? Well, Trae Young secured his draft spot last December. He was a projected top 10 pick by the time December hit. Why didn't he shut it down? Why does Trae Young think Zion Williamson should do something Trae Young actually did not do last year? Because now that Trae Young's removed from it, he's merely suggesting what it is he thinks he would do if he were Zion Williamson. But to a lesser degree, he was Zion Williamson last year. Radar slightly when the season started. Boom, incredible November, December. Leading National Player of the Year candidate and projected top 10 pick. Trae Young didn't shut it down, but now he thinks Zion Williamson should shut it down. To be clear, if Zion Williamson came out today and said, I'm going to shut it down, I cannot risk injury. That was a scary moment for me. And now that I am basically assured of being the number one pick in the NBA draft, I'm just going to stop playing competitive basketball until the contracts are signed. I would not criticize him for it. It is a financially sensible thing to do on some level. My only point is that playing is also sensible for lots of different reasons, and I wish the shut it down crowd would at least, on some level, acknowledge that.
Story number two.
Weird ending to a game down in Georgia last night. Mississippi State, Georgia, tied in the final seconds, right? Mississippi State's got the ball, comes down. Quindary Weatherspoon pulls up for a jumper, and he gets fouled, like 0.5 seconds on the clock. Tom Crean's going crazy. Crowd's going crazy because what they realize is fouling a jump shooter is probably about to cost them the game. So the Mississippi State player, Quindary Weatherspoon, steps to the free throw line, misses the first free throw, but while that happens, somebody from the crowd throws a stuffed animal, a bulldog, onto the court. And so the referees see this, and they get together, and they hit Georgia with a technical foul because somebody in the crowd at Georgia threw something on the court, presumably to protest the call that had just been made. And so it's a technical foul, one free throw. Weatherspoon knocks down the free throw. Then he misses the next free throw on purpose so that Georgia has to rebound it. Then the game's over, and the game's over. They win it 68-67. And I've thought about this for a while, but I tweeted it last night and it got a lot of attention. If officials, think about this, follow me here. If officials are going to hit home teams with technical fouls when objects are thrown on the floor in controversial moments of close games, what is to stop? And I know this is a hypothetical and unlikely to ever be the case, but follow me here. If referees are going to hit home teams with technical fouls when objects are thrown on the floor from the crowd in controversial moments of close games, what is to stop an opposing fan on the road in a close game controversial moment from throwing something on the court in an attempt to get the home team hit with a technical foul? In other words, let's say I'm a Memphis fan and Memphis is playing at Cincinnati and I go to the game. And I'm not wearing blue because I don't want it to be obvious who I'm rooting for. But Memphis-Cincinnati's in the final minute. And a whistle goes against Cincinnati, and the crowd's booing like crowds do. Boo! Terrible call! And I just take a Dr. Pepper and throw it on the court. The presumption would be a Cincinnati fan, because a whistle was just against Cincinnati, is upset, and that Cincinnati fan just threw a Dr. Pepper on the court. Technical foul, Cincinnati. I could, as a Memphis fan on the road, help Memphis get an extra point, maybe help Memphis win a game. Like, isn't it crazy that's a possible thing given the way the rules are written right now? When the refs assigned that technical foul last night, trust me when I tell you, they had no idea who threw that stuffed animal on the court. No idea. Now, I think it's reasonable to assume it was a Georgia fan who was upset about a call against Georgia. But once fans understand exactly what I just explained, if you wanted to do it, I'm not saying anybody would, yeah. But if you wanted to do it, you could go on the road disguised as a fan of the home team, even though you're a fan of the road team, and if this moment materialized, you could throw something on the court and maybe help your team actually get a technical free throw. And so I don't know that the NCAA will address this at the end of the season, but it is a loophole in the rules that probably does need to be closed.
Story number three.
So, Zion Williamson obviously suffers a knee injury last night. Earlier in the week, it was Reed Travis, Kentucky's one of its star front court players, who suffered a knee injury. And as is the case with the injuries, you never know till the MRI comes back. But the MRI did come back late yesterday after Kentucky got back from Missouri. And Reed Travis only has a sprained right knee instead of a torn right knee, which John Calipari acknowledged last night is like a big sigh of release. They're going to be cautious with him, so he is going to miss games, maybe even 2 weeks. But if you were a Kentucky fan worried that you might not have one of your front court players for a possible run in the NCAA tournament, that worry seems to have been taken off the table. Reed Travis, no structural damage, will not require surgery, might miss 2 weeks, but at worst, he should be back for the SEC tournament.
Story number four.
And then just terrible news out of Syracuse. Coach Jim Boeheim, the Hall of Fame coach, struck and killed a man late last night around 11:30 on the interstate. Struck and killed a man, obviously, with his vehicle. As the story goes, according to authorities, Jim was driving home, bad weather conditions, and a man's car had become disabled on the interstate. And in an attempt for Jim's attempt to avoid the car, he actually hit the man, and the man died.
Ugh.
And now that he was taken in, Jim was, and they did a sobriety test and, you know, all the things you do when something like this happens, and everything came back negative. There is literally no evidence whatsoever that, at least according to authorities, that Jim was speeding, that Jim was impaired. It just appears to be an awful and tragic accident. And I've seen a lot of tweets today with people going, how do you feel when that happens? I can't imagine what it's like when that happens. I don't say this for any other reason than it's true, but I also hit a pedestrian one time. We've talked about it before. It's when I was in high school. It's on Elvis Presley Boulevard, actually. The man was standing in the turning lane. Like, you know, you got two lanes going this way and two lanes going back, and then a turning lane. The man was, and it was raining, so the roads were a little slippery. And the man was standing in the turning lane, and he like just walked right out in front of me. What we subsequently found out, he was drunk. He had walked across the street to get like a 40 of beer and was walking back across the street, and he just stepped right out in front of me. But I hit him, and he flipped over my car and landed behind me. I mean, it looked like in the movies, right? Mm. And there was about 30 minutes there where I was sitting with police officers with no idea about whether or not I just killed a man or not. And I can just tell you, I still remember it like it was yesterday. It doesn't matter if, I mean, it does matter, but even if it's not your fault and you know it's not your fault, just like this appears to not be Jim's fault, and I knew when it happened to me that it wasn't my fault, that's still a scary thing, man. You think that you might have played a role in taking somebody's life? I mean, I was terrified, and I was just a teenager. The man lived.
That's good.
Yeah. And, you know, I was never charged with a crime. Mm-hmm. Again, I did nothing wrong. He ran right out in front of me. But just a scary, scary thing in that moment. And I was fortunate. I didn't have to live the rest of my life carrying around the idea, whether it was my fault or not, that I was in a vehicle that killed another human. But Jim is going to have to carry that around, even if it wasn't his fault. And I can't imagine that's an easy thing. So thoughts with everybody involved, both Jim's family and the victim's family, because that is not a story I expected to wake up this morning and read. Jeff Calkins is up next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.